Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Happy Monday to you. A few minutes past 4 p.m. Rach is out today. Had a doctor's appointment. She'll be back tomorrow. But gird your loins. She'll be gone all week next week. You know what? I'm taking off next week, too. You guys can figure this out yourselves. You and Andrew will be great.
I can't do the whole Sammy's and child talk thing, though.
He's a little upset because Andrew is whimsical, and he likes to call Lion's Choice, for example, beefy weefies,
which is weird.
Gross. Yeah. It's gross, is what it is. So, it's a gross term.
So we've had this going on.
I think they're delicious,
day.
Kevin. But I guess if you want,
The sandwiches are amazing. Your term is gross.
Mean to Lion's Choice.
When I was listening to you guys coming in, you were talking with Dave about the shaving and the I have hemophilia, so I've got to be very careful. And I've got the Styptic pencil and everything. Yeah. That's a big thing for me. And then what else did you guys talk about with Dave? There's like two things where like, I know something about this. I was in there right now, but I don't remember what the other one was.
Yeah. How old were you when you found out you had hemophilia?
I was out of high school. So I'm actually really glad I didn't find out. Based off the fact that I didn't die in high school because I didn't stop bleeding, I'm glad I didn't know because I never would have been allowed to play high school sports. Yeah, I played football. Yeah. I wrestled. I did all that stuff. Yeah. So if I would have known I had hemophilia, never could have I played high school sports.
Did you make it through all that time without any major cuts?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, oh man.
We found out about it because like my grandfather almost died during a surgery.
Oh.
My mom like burst through the doors and like the whole, it was like something from a TV show and basically saved his life because they knew that he had some sort of bleeding issue and then everybody in the family had to get tested from that point and that's when we found out.
So, this is dark, but how bad of a cut would you have to take if you were untreated for you to really be in trouble?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question because it's like the weird thing about hemophilia, and I've heard hematologists say this, it's different every day. Like one day you might get a small cut and your blood just decides to clot that day. Yeah. And then the next day you get the exact same cut and it's like, this is not stopping. Maybe a year ago, I was chewing gum and I bit my tongue like we've all done a million times. I've bit my tongue chewing gum before and you bleed for a few minutes and then it just would not stop. And I ended up going into the urgent care. It was the grossest thing in the world. They had to like sew up my tongue because it would not stop bleeding. Damn. Where if I bit my tongue right now, I'd bet there's an 80% chance I'd be fine.
Yeah.
But for some reason that day, my tongue said, hey, Matt, screw you. Man. I'm going to destroy your afternoon. You're going to go get your tongue laced up.
Dude, when you had that nasal thing, that story.
That was awful.
That was rough.
Yeah, it was. It's still one of the scariest moments of my life because my BP was just going up and up and up. And it was, 210 over one something or whatever. And they take me in, with the lights and sirens and everything. But I lived. Yeah. That's all that matters.
You're here, buddy.
I'm here.
Here you are.
Yeah.
Have a beefy weefer later.
Oh, boy.
There you go.
Say that.
So, Carter Report, sponsored by Rawlings. Visit the Rawlings Experience at Westport. By the way, my custom glove, ready today.
Nice.
May go get it tomorrow.
So you have to go get it.
They would have shipped it to me, but
it's better.
It's kind of like,
I think it's better to go get it.
I think I owe it to them.
Yeah.
Say thank you to people who did that.
Are you going to do anything to it? Like, are you going to just play with it to work it in, or are you going to do like run over it with the car, put the shaving cream in there? Like, what's the plan here?
They had three different levels of broken-endedness, and I don't plan to use this glove because last season I bought a really nice Heart of the Hide, and it's broken in perfectly. This will be more of like a show glove that no one cares about but me.
Okay.
So, I had them break it in as much as they could. So it should be pretty pliable.
Nice. Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Although I do love to break a glove in.
Yeah.
I love to do that. So much fun. You guys were talking, not Chicken Little, the sky's falling, but just a little bit of like, okay, it's been about a month now. Things are kind of trending in a negative direction. Talk to me.
Well, I mean, this weekend was, it wasn't overall terrible, but because Arizona's not a bad team, right? They're similar to you. You lose 2 out of 3. And this is a case where it's more about the how than the what. The way that you lost yesterday and the fact that you scored 15 runs in 3 days and still lost 2 out of 3, Dustin May has been bad for a month now. Ever since the complete game shutout, he's just not been the same. And he's saying that. I mean, like, this is not ripping him. He's saying those words, too. He gets it. He understands it. And, you're not getting the big step up yet from the other guys because, you know, they're still all basically still roughly five inning guys with the exception of maybe McGreevy. He gets a little deeper. But the bullpen's still fraying. Bernie pointed out last week that was his biggest worry about the team was the bullpen. And when we look at kind of where you are now compared to where you were at your high water point, you were nine games over 500, you know, in what, about 5 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And now you're only four games over 500. So you're five games under 500 for about the last 5 or 6 weeks. That's not a short-term trend. So that's why, like, and it needs to turn, not necessarily on a dime, but if we think this team is going to do anything with the idea of staying in the wild card race, the performance on the field needs to dictate that before the trade deadline.
And we need to be careful because yesterday was terrible. Yesterday was absolutely was one of the worst losses of the season, if not the worst loss of the season.
Yeah.
It was just terrible. Those things happen over 162 games.
Yes.
We can't jump off a cliff because of what happened yesterday.
Right.
Because people, I think, are trying to define what's going on over the last few weeks from one single game yesterday. That's the wrong approach. Yesterday was terrible, inexcusable. They should have never lost that game. Whatever negative word you want to apply to it, feel free, and it's probably not strong enough. Yesterday was bad. But what we need to look at is the bigger picture, what Kevin just mentioned.
Yeah.
And he's straight on. They're losing about a game against 500 every week over the last month plus. Now, it's a slow drain, so it can start going. You can start gaining a game against 500 on an every week basis, and you start moving right back up where you want to be. And that's not a crazy thought. This team doesn't have to be a great team to do that. The schedule in front of them is not the most challenging schedule in the world. So I would just try to remind folks that yesterday stunk, but let yesterday just be yesterday and stand on its own. And when you're evaluating this team, use the bigger picture.
Yes. And that's the hard thing to do because, you know, yesterday does play into the trend, the bigger trend, but it's not by itself a trend.
Right.
You know, it's a fluke. The last time they lost a game that they had a 7-0 lead was 16 years ago. That kind of thing just doesn't happen very regularly. But the fact that it did, and again, everything is ramped up now, even though it doesn't, it's not totally a logical thing, but it is a practical thing because there's time pressure. The deadline's coming. And you got to chart a course, whether it's hold, sell, buy. So the more you waver, the less likely it is it's going to be the kind of move that fans want it to be. And that means, you know, it doesn't mean you're automatic. There's no fire sale coming, by the way. Like, there's nothing like that. First of all, some of the guys you would want to trade are not very valuable at the moment.
And losing value. Yeah, see, I mean, Dustin
Romero's on the injured list. Don't know how long that process takes, but it's usually a couple of weeks for an amputation.
I've heard, I mean, people have set up to a month.
Yeah, so I mean, it could be out. So he could be out past the deadline. So that's one thing that's not, you know, big deal. May's not helping his value. In fact, his value may be as low as it's going to be. So it's that's why Bernie mentioned, I think that may be right. It might be a dud this year. It might be you don't sell anything for anything cool and you don't buy anything because there's no reason to buy and you just kind of play it out and see what happens.
The recent trend's going to matter, though. If you think back to last year when they sold largely because the 10 days leading to the deadline, they weren't very good.
Right.
If you go back and look at the standings, they were still very much in wild card contention when the trade deadline hit last year, but they were trending in the wrong direction.
Right.
And that forced the hand of the organization to sell. If they do the exact same thing this year, I would think the same sort of thing would happen. But to Kevin's point, I mean, there's a handful of guys. Lars Nootbaar would probably be the biggest name that you could see get moved and the guy who probably has the most value. Dustin May still has value no matter what. Jojo Romero, Ryan Stanek, Riley O'Brien are all guys who could potentially get moved. But I don't know what you're getting back for really any of those guys at this point.
Yeah, I mean, your best return of all those guys is probably O'Brien. It's an all-star closer, and everybody needs relievers.
But he's been
every contender needs relievers.
He's been trending in the wrong direction.
I get it.
So I actually think you get more for Nootbaar than O'Brien at this point.
Boy, when you're cheap and you have 4 years of control for a guy that throws 99, I mean, because teams will look at him and say, we can fix that, or we can improve that. And that doesn't mean they can. Everybody thinks that. Every team thinks, we'll make a tweak with that guy. We'll get him right. But because as you've pointed out, you're right about this 100%, that even though he's had his blowups, he's still good basically 8 out of every 10 times
right out.
You know, for a contending, and he won't be closing if he's traded somewhere. If he's traded to a contender, they have a closer. unless there's an injury between now and then. So he's probably would move into a setup role if that were the case.
Yeah, I mean, the only Mason Miller would get traded and be a closer somewhere else.
I'm trying to think of what.
But yeah. You know, last year with Helsley when he got moved,
yeah.
he moved right into
a setup role.
Yeah, he didn't go. So very few closers who get moved at the deadline become the closer on the next team. You have to be Mason Miller for that to happen.
Right. And it's happened. Like Aroldis Chapman did that for the Cubs when they traded for him back in the day.
If we don't add anyone significant to the big league roster, how much help do we have coming for next season from the minors?
Oh, a lot.
A ton.
Yeah. A lot. Pitching wise, especially.
Yeah.
I mean, Quinn Matthews is right at the top of the list, and he's finally kind of gotten it going for an extended run.
Yeah.
It's been about a month he's been good, right?
Quinn Matthews, Bryson Motts, Hunter Dobbins, Richard Fitz. If Teen Kent ever gets his put stuff together, he's AAA. I'm probably forgetting people off the top of my head.
Mason Molina's there.
Yeah, Mason Molina's been really
good. Liam Doyle will be at AAA next year, which means he's one phone call away.
Yeah.
And who knows? I mean, a guy like Doyle could be one of those guys that just blows your doors off in spring. You're like, we got to take him. I don't think they're going to rush him, but the point is he's already at AA, so he's one phone call away by next year, no matter what.
And then you have Joshua Baez, Leo Bernal,
Sanchez at AAA.
Yeah.
So like they have probably a dozen arms between AA and AAA that could help them next year, depending on how they perform and what else they do.
Yeah. You guys comfortable with Burley being our first baseman for the foreseeable future?
I don't see any reason to change it unless you just get a Godfather offer and you decide you can trade him.
The only thing I would throw out there is if at some point in time, Yvonne Herrera completely moves off of catching and you want to continue to use the DH spot to get guys off their feet and you want to keep Herrera in the lineup every day, does Herrera learn to play first base? And then are you facing a Burley versus Herrera decision? Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's anything that's happening directly. That's the only scenario that could play out where I'm like, well, maybe, because between those two guys, I feel like Herrera has more upside, but Burley has had this year, Burleson's been the better hitter.
Yeah, and you could make the argument if you want. I mean, again, this is not my position. It's saying you could make the argument that, well, you only have two more years of control with Burleson after this year. So if somebody were to blow you away, you could consider that. Because you know, that would absolutely decimate your lineup today. Yeah. Like if you took him out of that lineup today, you're basically raising a white flag.
I feel very comfortable with him at bat and in the field when he makes his great picks. I played first base. Just you know, I know what it's like to make a pick. It doesn't seem like I got lucky there. Like he really seems to have taken well to that position.
I think he's done a really nice job. Now, there are moments he doesn't look like a first baseman, but for the most part, I thought he was going to be pretty good, and he's been about what I expected him to be. I think, Kevin, he's been a little bit better than what you expected.
He's been better than I thought. He's been about league average defensively, which is fine. Nothing wrong with that because he's a good hitter. My concern has been real because I don't think he moves well, and his range ranks really low. But range is not a top factor for a first baseman.
How's the Blaze Jordan experiment gone so far?
He looked good yesterday. Drove in three yesterday.
So here's the thing with Blaze. He does something really well. He is a really good hitter with men in scoring position. He puts the ball in play. He finds a way to get the run home. For whatever reason, that's in his toolkit, and he's done it extremely well since he's been here. But for a guy that is a power hitter, he has one home run. And if he's going to be an everyday player, he's got to provide power. He's got to say, if he's slugging under 400, that doesn't work for a guy that's of his profile.
And he's not good enough. And this goes to what Kevin's saying. He's not good enough defensively to be playing if he's not hitting.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a reason he's played a lot less lately. There's a reason we're seeing more of Fermin at third base. Because if you're only going to get contact out of that position, well, Fermin moves better, runs better, does a lot of other things better than Blaze Jordan does.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it. Back, DGS 425. Query. Can you be powerful in 2026 without money?
No.
Yes.
Okay.
But it requires a level of technological savvy and ability to go beyond money. Like, you can influence things through social media, through algorithms. I mean, in fact, I saw somebody recently, and I don't remember exactly who it was. I can't remember if it was somebody's social scientist or if it was actually a rich person who's like, hey, look, money's great, but algorithms are more important. They're able to, like, feed you what they think you need to be fed based on what you like and what you will consume. And that's how they can influence you even more than just using money to do it directly.
Who's the most powerful person you can think of who's not rich? Like, I'm sure we have some Martin Luther Kings, but I don't know who they are, who are just out there preaching the good word and gaining power.
Yeah, I gotta say, I cannot think of one.
I guess it depends on how we're defining rich, right? Are we talking billionaire level? Or are we just talking million? Because if you're talking about millions, well, everybody in Congress is that.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I would think anybody that's a major state level politician, if you're a governor, you're probably somewhat wealthy.
But I don't think people with millions can influence much.
Not as much.
With their money alone.
Yeah. Well, the problem, too, is all those people that we're thinking of, if they don't have the money themselves, they have the money behind them. Super PACs and lobbyists and corporate interests and things like that. So I don't know. Is there, can you think of anybody?
No.
Because I really can't. That's like not wealthy, not running an algorithm that kind of does the work for them, just uses their words to spread ideas and influence people.
Yeah. No, I can't think of anyone. Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Listen up. This is going to be important. We're talking to our good friend, Dr. Tiffany Osborne from WashU Medicine. We're going to talk about what's going on with lettuce and Taco Bell and your booty and all that kind of stuff. Doc, I don't want to be flirty with you, but when I think of you and I think of explosive diarrhea, I just can't help but think of Dr. Tiffany Osborne. So.
There we go. I hear something.
Okay, there we go. Now I hear it. Yes.
Third time's a charm.
I was just going to quit if that one didn't work. Just walk out.
You were going to quit.
This is my retirement.
That's great.
I didn't think that I was being ignored there, for sure.
So, Doc, let's start out from the very beginning. Here's what I know. I know that we're picking this stuff up off of leafy green vegetables and so forth. My first question is, let's say that Wheeler catches it from his salad. Can I catch it from Wheeler, or is it only through contact with food?
Yes, only through contact with contaminated food or water. You can't get it from another person.
Okay. And this is going to be a little bit gross, but it's a gross topic. Is this coming from human excrement on the produce? Is that how it happens?
That's one way that it can happen. Basically, you get the parasite inside of a person, and then the person's stool has then contaminated either a water source that's used to irrigate the food or the food itself. So that's typically like how it, and then what happens is basically these things that come out of you, that basically you can consider it like the egg of a parasite, right? So it's got a hard type of shell around it that is very protective of the parasite. And then it's in sort of this irrigation or water that's used to spray the vegetables, and it then matures in temperate climate. So it actually has to be pretty hot in general for it to mature to the point where it can become infectious when you eat it. It takes like 14 days for it to actually go from being like this egg to being this infectious thing that you ingest. And then it takes around 2 to 14 days for you to develop symptoms after you have become exposed to it. And the thing is that it doesn't take very much for it to infect you and actually become infectious. So if you ingest even a little bit, then it can cause an infection in you. And one of the issues with that is that typically you would say, you know, your post-harvest decontamination, like a lot of times they might spray chlorine or something to try to make sure things are dead, you know, killed off any type of infectious organism, but that doesn't work on these particular organisms because that shell around that egg that we're calling is so protective. So washing it doesn't help because it sticks to these leafy vegetables. It helps a little bit, but it doesn't get it completely off. Taking off the outside, you know, if you have like a cabbage or something, mm-hmm. or you have an iceberg lettuce and you're like, oh, I'm just going to take off the outside leaves, that doesn't help because it gets inside of it. Washing it off doesn't help because it doesn't take it all off. And if you only need to ingest a small amount for it to infect you.
So basically, if the farm where you get your produce from was infected by this, your chances are really good of you being infected by this.
That is correct.
And, wow, I mean, I just have to sit with that for a second because everyone's out there thinking, yeah. No, I heard if you do this and if you dunk them and if you that and if you take the first few layers off. So, Doc, this is going to sound like a bad stand-up joke, but it's the truth. I don't eat a lot of vegetables at all, especially leafy green vegetables. Is that okay for me to keep doing that for a couple months and just kind of lay low?
So, yes, with a caveat. So what I'll tell you is, like, I predominantly eat vegetables. Like, that's my predominant food source. And in general, the way this works is they track it to a specific food source. So this, the iceberg lettuce that they were talking about, that's what you would really want to avoid. Now, I've got to say, so the CDC has about 1,650 confirmed cases, right? Around 140 hospitalizations, around 5,000 illnesses that are, quote, under investigation. Now, originally, when the FDA came out and said, we know where this is coming from, really what they were saying was the surveillance test was positive for the iceberg lettuce that was coming specifically from Taylor Farms, right, in Mexico. But what it was surveillance. And the thing with surveillance is you're looking at sensitivity over specificity. So basically, you're saying in my surveillance test, it's going to be super sensitive because I would rather have a false positive than miss any tests. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to do confirmatory tests afterwards. Well, when they did a confirmatory test, it was negative. So basically, they said that this was a false positive that came from Taylor Farms. So they can't say they have a definitive source. Now, having said that, of that 1,650 confirmed cases from everything I've read, and I've been going through like the FDA publications and the CDC publications, and like I've been going through a lot of different sources. Based on what I think I'm seeing, is that of those 1,600 cases, probably 95% of them, the people said they ingested iceberg lettuce from a Taco Bell, and the iceberg lettuce came specifically from the Taylor Farms in Mexico. So that's where they're getting it. That's where it's getting it from. So I think that's a pretty safe assumption at this point in time to make.
Okay.
So your question is, should I stop eating vegetables? And the answer is stop eating iceberg lettuce and anything that probably comes from that same area of Taylor Farms.
Welcome back, DGS. You had to go and brief Maria Kina. She's a rabbit. She eats nothing but salads, and I'm like, you're done. You're just done. Just go sit on the toilet, buy some Charmin. I'll drop by care packages for you. What? What was I going to say?
I don't know.
You're supposed to know these things, Andrew.
Let's see.
You were going to say...
That... you were worried about your nightly Taco Bell runs.
So to speak.
Well, you probably don't use that word with Taco Bell.
I've eaten more salads lately than I have in years.
Yeah?
I don't know what it is.
Are you...
Like the last few days, I've just been like, you know, it sounds good, salad.
Are you wanting...
Dave's like, do I want the parasite?
I wouldn't mind a couple days. Let's just... We all know who I am.
That's why I'm asking.
We all know who I am. I think it would get pretty... Pretty old after that.
Yeah, seems pretty intense.
And a poor kid, you know? Some kid gets this. That's awful. Wheels Vic is being demanding and asking about Cardinals baseball, so we must appease him. Can you take a couple minutes and just kind of wrap up this weekend?
Yeah, pretty close to garbage. It was awful.
Pretty close.
That was a bad weekend, man.
Certainly was.
Mostly bad because of yesterday. To put it into perspective, like they blew a 7-0 lead. The last time that happened was 16 years ago. 2,500 games between then and now. That's how rare it is to blow a 7-run lead in a game.
Yeah.
Or a 7-0 lead, I guess. I don't know. But the last one, I think, was at Coors Field, and it was when Tony La Russa was managing the team. And it's like, you can't lose games when you're up 7-0 if you're trying to make a push. It's not the end of the world. It's one game.
Amen,
but
brother.
Like losing a series that way, Dustin May really struggling again by his own admission, just not good enough. The bullpen blew it yesterday, and of course, Pallante had a role in blowing it in that game too. That's not the kind of stuff you want to see in your week and a half, 2 weeks out from the trade deadline.
What is Dustin doing or not doing? Can you see it?
Yeah, he can't throw his fastball for strikes. So, like, when he's coming into the zone, he's got to come into the zone, like, in the middle of it, and he's walking people. I mean, I give athletes credit when they own things and when they explain, like, okay, look, I just have to be better. I'm not throwing enough strikes. I'm walking too many people. I should have covered home plate. I give all of them credit for doing it because some guys don't. Like, we lived through years of Miles Michaelis making excuses.
Yeah.
Well, some balls just got through. Bad luck.
Soft contact.
Yeah, soft contact. No, dude, you're getting rocked. At least I give May credit for owning it, but Dustin May has been pretty awful since his complete game shutout.
We didn't help him much, though.
That was June 15th, though.
Potheads didn't help him out.
No, but again, I am on the side of the catcher needs to block anything that bounces within a certain amount of feet, within like a certain range, right? Mm-hmm. Pais was not good. He did not help him. But that doesn't mean that had anything to do with May walking the house and then throwing cookies because he had to.
Right.
You know, Dustin May's not exactly helping his trade standing here either. So, like, either way this goes, trying to stay in it or trying to trade, not a good thing when he's had a month like this. And, you know, the bullpen, as Bernie pointed out last week, is its own separate issue.
Andrew, you can't win when you're throwing cookies. I hear you say that all the time. Mm-hmm.